But why did he kill him?
You gotta let this go. This is,
but it's what the show's
about. I know it's the murder, Jez, but it's almost like this episode could just be She Wrote.
I'm in a real identity crisis here, Al.
Nothing penetrates within Dawson.
Who do you see in the mirror?
Hey!
Oh, Grey, hot.
Hello and welcome to The Incomplete Series, the podcast where we watch the first episode of a TV series and then the last episode of that TV series, and then figure out if it's worth watching. My name's Morgan, and joining me to do this is my good friend Jeremy. Jerome, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Morgan.
It's good to
be here. Happy to be back in person.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can see your flesh.
Yep.
Mm.
Hopefully... the bigger, stronger nerds don't come knocking down the door.
We can't talk about it. I'm cutting this out.
Edit that out.
Why not? Shout out to that guy.
We don't talk about our TikTok spoken word diss tracks. We ignore them and they go away.
I mean, you cut a lot of shit out of this podcast, Scott, but I feel like it's a tall order to cut, like, the fourth word out.
Yeah,
it's good. We're starting early.
Aaron, it's either I cut this out or I cut him in. And I'm not doing that.
Yeah. The magic you can do in post. I'm sure you can make this sound really smooth.
We've made an enemy. We should address it. We've made an enemy.
Finally.
Jeez.
After 78 episodes, we finally made an enemy. Out?
I don't think he listens, but he
we incurred the wrath of some Supernatural fans.
Yeah.
Let's hope we don't do the same to Murder, She Wrote fans.
Oh, they'll find us. Don't worry.
Yeah, we'll...
Maybe we just take this time to, unilaterally apologize for every single... diss we've ever made against a TV show. It was all in jest. It's all for the clicks. It's all for the downloads. You know,
might have been in jest for you, but I'm dead serious the whole time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I take that back. Scott, can you cut that out?
Yeah. If you want to know what we're talking about, I'm not going to explain it, but you can just go to one of our Supernatural TikToks, look to see who's some people who've stitched it, and you'll find out.
Yeah.
See, that's good.
Is that a TikTok thing? Stitching? What's that mean?
See, now I'm going to cut this out because it sounds like I didn't do it intentionally as a marketing thing.
Cool. Well, anyway, let's just jump ahead. Aaron, how are you? You're also here.
I am here. I'm fantastic, yeah. Morgan.
Physically here as well, I should point out. We're all physically here.
Imagine if you said he wasn't.
No, I'm not here.
I'm not here. The ghost of you. The ghost of Abe. And Scott, you're here as well. I think I've introduced you.
Actually here.
Yeah, you're physically here. We're
actually
Aaron in
lied
house.
When he said he was here, but I'm really here.
We're in your studio. Your studio apartment.
It's true.
is that why they're called studios?
No, yeah, exactly. That's why they're called studio apartments.
Yeah, every single recording studio, the producer always sleeps under the mixer. Yeah. Because it's also his apartment.
It's the life they've chosen.
Exactly.
It's a legal loophole.
Yeah.
There's no way out of it.
Mm-hmm. I have so much to learn.
It's like a lighthouse and they have the lighthouse
the
keeper.
Studio keeper.
Yeah.
Studio keeper.
It's a solitary life.
You are married. You're married to the industry now, Scott.
Well, what are you going to do?
And the sea.
Does that mean that I can claim...
It's kind of like a dual thing.
Can I claim some of my rent on tax? Or is it like I'm saying that it's a house so that I save money on business expenses?
You can claim your light bulbs that blow on tax because presumably the tax man believes that you're using
like,
to guide ships safely.
Mm. Do the ATO think I work here or do they think I live here?
I think it's a bit of both. I think you can claim a lot of the expenses.
That ruins the whole thing.
It's a real blind spot for the ATO.
Yeah.
As long as you're either in a studio or a lighthouse, they don't really care what you do.
I'm looking forward to that, the sequel to The Lighthouse, the studio.
Yeah.
Scott and Willem Dafoe is getting hammered on turpentine.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I'm in.
Only if I'm making it.
Yeah.
Mm. It's an only audio format. No visual.
Yeah.
So like it's a podcast movie.
I like
Ooh, that's
it.
That's a thing. Untapped market.
No, it's a tap market.
Like a radio serial.
I think it would be
a good radio serial.
Not in the cinema. You can just download them.
Well, Scott's Lighthouse will be the first podcast movie made for IMAX.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The studio, just a blank screen with audio.
Blow your ears right off.
all that energy they save on not having visuals, they can pump
directly
into the THX sound system.
They'll have 3D sound.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna be the last thing you hear. But
you'll be bleeding. Everyone will be good. Everyone will be bleeding from the ears.
Exactly.
What a way to go.
Two bloody ears. The review.
All right. Well,
which is a good thing in the podcast world.
Oh, exactly. If your ears are bleeding after you've listened to it, you've listened to something good.
We've done our jobs.
Exactly. I don't rest until I've bloodied people's ears.
Can we do like? What are some sounds that are really aggressive in someone's earbud?
That are really going to rattle the skulls of
stupid pop filter.
Only I think P-words.
It's still quite aggressive.
All right. I really cranked my P's up this episode.
This episode, we did Murder, She Wrote. Now, this is something we've been talking about for a long time. Jerome, you've been resisting because of the long pilot that we had to endure.
Yeah, long, and I just had a feeling that it would drag and be a bit boring in the sort of...
plot department?
Yeah, just generally. Like, there's some interesting points, but it definitely dragged and it definitely got boring.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you hate old people. You hate the elderly.
I hate the smell.
This must have really got up your goat then. Because
so many old dudes.
This is really directed at...
Heaps of old dudes.
Yeah, a lot of older people.
Lots of men with, like, grey comb-overs. Just in both episodes.
Three-piece suits.
Oh, yeah, big time. In fact, and the villains...
Like, every single actor over 70 in, you know, the whole of the US, I think, would have been in that.
Mm-hmm. These guys... This is... You know, I may as well bring it up now. But I feel like people back in, like, the 80s and early 90s, they looked older than what they were. Because
they aged themselves up.
The Chowder King, which we will establish who he is when we get into the pilot episode. The Chowder King, he's meant to be 58. But he looks every bit of 78.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
He's doing himself no favors.
But I would have thought early 80s.
Yeah, but no, he's 58. But that's what, like, punching, you know, 50 cigarettes, and drinking scotch lunch.
Is the actor 58 or is...
I didn't look it up. I know...
But do they mention that in the episode?
Angela Lansbury is 59.
Yeah, she's 59.
In episode one.
Yeah,
so
she's... I mean,
she looks...
Her head looks old. But I think that's mostly because of her haircut.
But her body...
It's an older head.
Old man.
But her body. She comes out in that fairy costume.
Yeah.
She keeps it tight.
She keeps it real tight.
I think at least 15 minutes of the first episode is like a montage of her exercising.
She's
running around.
She's out partying till like 4 a.m. and then just going for a run.
And a run at 6 a.m. and she's biking everywhere. And she's pumping it as well. She's not just... There's no basket on the front. She's really like...
Mm-hmm. She does have an interesting running style. Also, the towel around the neck while she runs in the tracksuit.
Well, it's not ladylike to sweat, Morgs. Come on.
This is true. This is true. I wasn't aware of this.
I was going to say, Morgs, do you think that it's old people looked older...
I think everyone looked
like
older.
30 years ago, or do you think older people look younger now?
Oh,
I think
it's probably a combination of.
Yeah,
we're sort of meeting somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think so. I think people looked at like people aged worse.
Well, they dressed. They aged worse. They dressed more conservatively. I think the fashion looks so dated that it really ages them up as well.
True.
Blouses and weird.
This show's also
everyone had. Terrible haircuts or, in the case of this show, terrible wigs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, terrible weaves as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same thing, more or less.
I think we should say that this is probably our most requested show from
listeners.
Is it
really?
With probably a grand total of 3.
Ah, hey.
I also didn't realize it was
fans have been screaming for
set in the US. I didn't realize it was an American show. I thought it was an English show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because Angela Lansbury, you know.
Is she English? I thought she was American.
She's American. Just the name?
English accent, doesn't she?
No, I think she's just got sort of like a more wealthy, like a aristocrat. Is that what I'm trying to say?
Aristocratic?
Aristocratic, sort of like she's like an upstate New
Aristotelian?
Yorker. Yeah,
She was born in London.
Okay, there you go. Well, perhaps you're right then, Jez.
Interesting.
I'm wrong.
So usually where people are born is where they're from?
I don't know. I don't think that's right.
No?
No.
Okay.
You just sort of like, personally, I'm from Buenos Aires in Argentina because I've just decided that's where I'm from. That's how it works.
It's
a culture, Morgan.
Exactly. I've never been to.
Wouldn't choose to go there.
To Argentina, let alone on the continent. But I definitely feel like I'm like spiritually from there.
Feel it. Yes, we should thank our listener Paul, who has suggested a couple of bangers to us.
Yeah.
Who also has suggested Murder, She Wrote. It was already on our radar, but you've pushed us.
Gave us the impetus.
You just given that little nudge.
That's what we needed.
Got Jez over
nudge
the line.
Into it.
I know, I always ask this question, so I need
to... she's English. She's heaps English.
Oh, okay, fine.
Did you just pull up her biography on IMDb?
Yes.
That thing is fucking long.
Yeah, it's massive. Yeah. She's still a lot.
It's like 8,000 words. She's still writing more every 96. Day.
Say, like, is she on your list now? Like, Sydney Poitier and Betty White were? Are you coming for her next?
She's on a different list.
after episode one with the fairy costume.
Oh, yeah. With that body?
I keep thinking you're saying furry, and I think the listeners are going to think it as well.
Sorry. Okay,
it'll be the first documented
furry.
Furry, yeah, probably
could be.
Mm. But it was like it's so in its infancy. It's not even an animal costume.
They didn't have a name for it.
They didn't have a concept for it.
Yeah. Didn't even think you could get turned on.
Just before, but I have to ask this question. Experience with the show. Have you guys seen any of Murder, She Wrote?
Have to.
It's in the bylaws.
Gun to your head.
I feel like I might have.
He doesn't get paid if he doesn't know.
Exactly.
Have you watched it?
I reckon it's just on.
I feel like I've just, this is just on. It's, I've absorbed some parts of it.
But yeah.
Did they use it in law school?
No, more writing school.
Case studies.
The sort of the Lansbury precedent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How you can just sort of...
We can get into this later, but is she ever a member of the police force?
No, but she inserts herself into all their business.
All of their business. She's just...
And they just fly back and accept it.
Coincidentally around a lot of murders. Because from the first and last episode, she's just kind of there and someone dies.
Well, this is what I'm going to say. This is what I think the precedent is. I think the Lansbury precedent would be that if some civilian uncovers or discovers more evidence than the lead investigator, you've got to throw the case out.
Or you take over.
Or...
It's your case.
Both. Throw the case out, sack that detective.
Yeah.
But the two detectives that they show in the two episodes are both like bumbling idiots.
Wildly
incompetent. From different ends of the bumbling idiot spectrum. But she's just obviously just going around. She's got a list of all of the worst detectives in America.
And she goes
to
town.
She just goes from town to town and just dunks on them.
Well, she does... I was going to say, I'll save this for the middle, but primarily, it's set out of Cabot Cove, which is their hometown.
Yeah.
So,
in Maine?
In Maine. But anyway.
A lot of chowder in Cabot Cove.
A lot of chowder. Ooh, chowder capital
Lobster
of
the... Lobster stew.
Chowder shellfish capital of the US. But anyway, should we jump into the pilot and we'll start unpacking the monster pilot that we were subjected to?
Murder, She Wrote kicks off with Jessica Fletcher, a widow from Maine who, in her sadness, has written a murder mystery novel. Unbeknownst to her, her nephew Grady passed it on to a publisher friend, and lo and behold, within a couple of weeks, it's a national bestseller.
They book you on the Today Show, David Letterman, Phil Donahue. These publicity junkets, they come with the territory.
Yes, but what would I say? I mean, I just make a fool of myself.
Ah, come on, they'll love you, just like I do.
Small town Jessica is now in New York, reluctantly doing interviews to promote her book when she gets invited to a party upstate by Preston Giles, the head of her publishing agency. He's taken a fancy to Jessica, and they seem to be hitting it off nicely.
You know, Mrs. J.B. Fletcher, you could be a very disruptive influence in my life.
Well, only my students call me Mrs. Fletcher, Mr. Giles.
At the party, guests have dressed up as their favourite literary characters, and believe it or not, there's been a murder. Sherlock Holmes is found dead in the pool. The man underneath the costume is a PI hired by a guest to investigate some shady business dealings. There's a host of suspects and the police are befuddled. But fear not, as Jessica steps in to use her brilliant powers of deduction and giant possum eyes to help solve the case. She eventually unravels the mystery. It was Preston, the host himself, who killed the PI after he threatened to reveal the publisher's secret past, that he was sentenced to 15 years in prison, escaped, and faked his own death.
Well, I've had enough. I've had enough murders, enough puzzles, enough suspects. You know, I don't even think I'm going to write another book.
Sure you will. And I'll be the first one to read it.
And whilst this chapter may be closed, Jessica Fletcher's career in crime is just getting started.
I'm coming hot. I wonder if they do this every episode, but when the killer is giving their confession, they just retrofit the whole sort of motive and reason for the murder and everything. Well, that's motive and reason for murder, the same thing. But it's like they reveal just enough of the killer's backstory as well in that same sort of monologue.
Yeah, yeah.
For it all to be wrapped up nicely. None of this is like hinted at. You'd think you'd know that this guy escaped from prison and was running a publishing house.
This is a pretty high-profile person.
This is 4 minutes to go in a 90-minute episode. They unravel this entire massive sprawling backstory that is insane.
I couldn't go through that. Not after all these years. Many years ago, I was betrayed by three partners in a business venture. And I was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Not everyone was convinced that I was dead. Saturday was the first time I'd seen him in 22 years, and I didn't recognize him. But obviously, he recognized me.
There were so many chunks of his backstory.
Just exercise montages.
Well, I thought... that didn't really... Like, the whole thing about him being the being a part of some property development deal that fell over and people died at the tower, wherever it was.
Just brushed right past
it. Why add that in? Like, I thought with some of the people at the party, was the Chowder King one of the investors? Did he get... I don't really understand.
You know, like, sprinkle this throughout.
Yeah, yeah. Leave some breadcrumbs. But exactly. It's such a crazy story. He got sentenced to 15 years in prison, escaped, faked his death.
No, they assumed he died.
Oh, okay, but he's sort of...
Let's just go with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I apologize.
And then he has this massive career in publishing, becomes like a New York bigwig.
Yeah.
Outrageously wealthy.
Police.
And he's...
He's not really keeping a low profile. He looks eerily similar to that guy that
escaped prison.
Which would be a high profile.
He'd be on the FBI's most wanted list.
Yeah. Well, he said that he knew the private detective. He's like, I didn't think he'd recognize me. Why wouldn't he recognize you?
Because you're in a Count of Monte Cristo costume from the waist down, exactly, just in a suit.
You recognized him.
Exactly. How do you see me?
It's exactly that, isn't it?
The Count of Monte Cristo. That's what jogged his memory?
Yeah, yeah.
How?
But ever since I entered this room, I've been trying to deduce who you're dressed as. And I think I have it. It's Edmond Dantès, isn't it? The Count of Monte Cristo.
I didn't realize the story of the Count of Monte Cristo, but apparently people try to pin something on him and he escapes, or I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Does anyone know? Has anyone seen it?
I've seen the film, yeah.
Has it got Antonio Banderas?
No, it's Jim Caviezel and Guy Pearce.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I always get confused with the man with the iron mask.
Yeah, that's Antonio Banderas.
Kind of much good.
No,
Chris,
no. I don't know.
I think
he should have been in both those movies.
Yeah,
and a very.
You're thinking of Zorro.
I'm thinking of Zorro.
That's the confusion.
Where is Monte Cristo?
I think it's a French story.
Okay,
I think it's set in France.
Antonio Banderas, he's French, right?
He can do French.
He's got range. He's got range. Anyway. Just quickly, one thing I want to point out. At the party, the guy who played Humpty Dumpty, did you guys recognize the Eggman?
No,
Humpty Dumpty?
But I love
that
costume.
That's what he was.
Yeah,
Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah. You didn't get it by all the egg puns when you walked in?
Oh, is that what he said?
Oh, firing from the hip.
Jess, I warn you, Arnold is a notorious punster.
Exactly.
I thought he was like a mascot for like a biscuit company or something.
Just shilling at the party.
Well, eggs are, you know, like, there's a spherical element to them. He was a disc.
I do like the idea that,
you know,
promoting biscuits, like, you get promo people at a bar, like, handing out specific drinks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's at, like, a quaint little tame party.
With
handing
full
out
old people,
digestives.
Like digestive biscuits, yeah. They'd love that.
Micro-targeting.
Digestives promo egg.
Did you guys recognize him?
No,
Eggman. I looked Humpty at it. Dumpty. I saw him. I'm like, you look really familiar, the actor. It was Leonard from Community.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, my God.
Which makes sense because he's an older man, especially.
Yeah.
Probably fits
he
the
had
time
a career
frame.
Before Community.
He was in his 90s in Community.
Community,
yeah. Sure,
yeah.
So.
RIP?
Yeah, I think so.
RIP.
Yeah.
Best to be safe.
Yeah.
I think every. Cool actor in this show that we talk about, we could probably just cover off with an RIP.
Not Lansbury.
Not Lansbury. No.
Lansbury's
she might have outlasted
literally
everyone else that was in it.
Indestructible. Mm-hmm. Well, she outlasted pretty much everyone in
Although
the show.
Although a lot of the, in the first episode, a lot of the partners of the older men were clearly just 35-year-old women in grey wigs.
Well, you know.
There was
especially the captain's partner. She had like the cheapest, greyest wig.
Before 1990, you could not hire an actor who was a woman who was below the age of 60. Not allowed.
And Lansbury broke the barrier after she turned 60.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Season 2.
Exactly. Clicked over.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But they contracted it beforehand.
Interesting. So they had to do the old Martin Scorsese de-age trick.
Yeah.
I guess so.
That's where it came from.
Is it?
It's the second 20s. Time you've brought this up about The Irishman. She might even be the third.
Really irks me. Just cut away. Don't show him kicking the man in front of the fruit shop, you know? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. I probably shouldn't be offering notes to Marty, but come on, Marty.
I mean, he could have done other things.
Just cut away. Anyway.
But, what an opener from Angela Lansbury, a.k.a. Jessica Fletcher, where she's sitting in like a local theatre production somewhere with her like two friends.
In Cabot Cove.
And just straight up says to the director like...
And I'm sure no one will ever guess the uncle is the killer.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Huge power play. Huge energy.
Yeah.
Not only that.
Straight out of the gate.
Did you notice that she towered over that guy?
Oh, man.
She's immediately taller than
him. Did you do what I did? You just immediately Google, how tall is Angela Lansbury?
Yeah. Wait, she's 7'9".
Is she like 6'3"?
She's like 6'7". She's like LeBron's height. Okay. LeBron's build. That's why she wears that dress so well.
And athleticism.
You wouldn't.
No, I couldn't find her. I didn't look up her height. I just assumed he was like a really short person. Short man.
She's like 177 or something. So yeah. She's like decently tall.
That's pretty tall.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Like 5'8", 5'9".
Internet centimeters. Mm-hmm. So she...
Internet centimeters.
Yeah, that's like people, she's 100 people's tall.
People's height is always just different on the internet. Okay. People lie about it. Uh-huh. But no, that guy, I reckon he
but
was...
she probably... It's usually, I would say for women, they probably... lie by reducing it for actresses.
Yeah, yeah, but I guess still 5'9" is still pretty tall.
Mm. You tell me Tom Cruise isn't? He's 7'1".
No, he's got a really big set of Cuban heels. He rolls with
1.5 feet.
Platforms. it's all visual trickery and the Cuban heels.
I knew it.
But that guy it was tiny. But also, the clue she points out to unravel the mystery at like the play, what she says, I can't remember.
He came back with a different tie on.
Yeah.
I feel like that, not even the play would have written that in.
No.
That's a costume mistake.
It's an accident. Yeah. And she just got lucky with the guess. Like, uh-huh, she's guessing uh-huh clues that aren't even there.
Mm.
The writers of Murder, She Wrote obviously took her advice on board because they offered up absolutely nothing to hint at who the murderer might be and what
but the thing about this episode was they were peppering little red herrings and stuff all along, just kind of like build it all, undercut it all at the end.
Can't be all red herrings.
That's my problem with these, like, kind of the whole genre is...
Mm. Murder mysteries.
Yeah, they set up so many different suspects and give you so many reasons why it could be any of them. And then at the end, it's like, you have to pick one. There's legitimate options across the board, but then it's just like, oh, it was this guy, obviously, and this one person knew all along.
Well, that's the
but
thing.
But to us, the viewer, it's like, well, you're just kind of picking one out of a hat.
The formula probably is they pick the one who they've hinted at, like they've made zero hint might be the killer. The person that has absolutely no reason to be the killer.
Yeah, it's always, but it was this other guy, the one you didn't suspect.
Because we gave you no reason to suspect, because we just introduced him.
Yeah,
yeah. It almost,
and you're smart and you're dumb.
It almost makes their kind of power sort of supernatural, because like the whole element of these is that like you can guess who it is.
Yeah, it's
like
a little sort of puzzle while you
watch. It's a little puzzle. Maybe you can figure it out. Maybe somebody will get it right, but... when you actually like can't at the end, and it doesn't make any sense that the protagonist, whoever it is, you know, Lansbury or Poirot or whatever, when they actually legitimately can't do it, and it's just like it just serves the plot to be like, well, yeah, they got it right because they're smart and you're dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
They notice these facts.
It takes the fun out of it a little bit. Like
The one hint we were given was he drunk? He was a bit out of it. Private detective. Probably because he'd been smacked in the face. But do they even... I don't know. He's rummaging around and then he gets chased and then they're confronting him and he's like, ah, you know. He looks at a statue of the Scales of Justice and then looks at the eventual murderer and says, oh,
Count Monte Cristo.
Yeah, Count Monte Cristo. Yeah.
That was the tell, which is such a stretch.
Which we had no idea about until he confessed it.
Yeah, I was thinking... Antonio Banderas was a Count Monte Cristo.
No, exactly. That wasn't a I know what you're going to say.
I just want to dial in on that scene. So Brady's there, Jesse Fletcher's nephew. They're at this party at this mansion sort of thing, and everyone's presumably got their own rooms. They're staying there, and Brady like is there. Grady's outside, sees a light on in his room. That's like, quote unquote, his room. Yeah, just the room he's staying in. Somebody's in there. He's like, oh my God, somebody's in there.
I know
runs up, sees whoever's in there, doesn't know why he's there, whatever.
Immediately just starts throwing
says
hands.
Nothing. Says nothing. Bombs runs him. Straight in like a massive wound punch.
This is a mansion.
Punch.
Like, this could be a cleaner. This could be a butler. No, this could be anyone. Just go also, in and ask him.
And there's probably like 15 bedrooms
punch
in there.
First, Scott.
Like,
ask
I don't even know if you would even recognize that it's your room.
Exactly. There's so many there.
And like, he's been there for maybe like 3 hours, the first time he's ever been there. Immediately just
runs in.
It's his boss's mansion, right? Maybe he's been there before.
Maybe.
Let's put
nobody goes in, turns the lights on.
Unpack
not in Grady's room.
No, and unpack that further. That guy, he runs it. Grady's what? 30?
Yeah, 31?
Guy runs in bombs. He's like 68. He probably beats the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And probably
you're in trouble here, man. Yeah,
that would have been clean out. A much, much better murder show if he just like king hit this retiree and then it's like a.
He's got like a knife sort of thing. He's just gone into the wrong room.
Oh, outrageous.
I'm glad you pointed that out.
Literally comes out swinging.
Yeah.
Like the only reason why it was acceptable is because we know it's a murder show.
Yeah.
Like, any other show, you'd be like, what is this guy doing?
Like, no hesitation. I've never run in somewhere where someone's like. Like, someone's not where they're supposed to be. You don't run in there and hit them straight away. You go, hey, what are you doing in here?
Yeah.
Like, there's a more measured response than running in there and, you know, punching the guy in the back of the head.
You've got to soften them up first.
True. Work them over and then get the information you want.
Mm-hmm. So, can we get into the... So the guy who's hosting this soiree has, like, some sort of chowder empire.
Wait, is he hosting it? Or
he's one of the guests. Sorry.
Yeah.
Can we dial into that a little bit?
Preston Giles is the host.
Which is, they're both last names.
Preston can be a first
Preston
name.
Preston Giles.
If anything,
Giles
it's probably around
can be a first
that,
name. Preston can be a first name.
They're both almost interchangeable.
Yeah,
you could Giles Preston.
Giles Preston.
Giles Preston Giles.
I like Giles Preston. It. Yeah, that's a good name.
I don't know. If you met him...
Like Adam Brody.
Like he's clearly... Obviously, he's faked his own death and just come up with a name. And
he rolls with
his red... On the, you know, it's like the Preston Giles Weekly magazine or something. It's like, oh, that's a good name.
Yeah, I'll like take that. That's a pretty, it's a very elegant name.
He's a fancy
boy. If you want to be anonymous, you don't pick a name like Preston Giles.
I feel like Preston as well, it's sort of, you're either like a 10-year-old son of a really rich person or you're an older rich man. There's no in between. Like, there's no young, there's no people in their 30s or their 20s called Preston.
No.
They, like, change their name by the time they're 30.
You then evolve into a new name and then it comes back in your older age.
Preston.
I assume. Like you become Giles, and then into your 50s you come become Preston again.
I put it to you that no one's called Preston ever.
Have you met one?
No, you know of course I have.
You know what? I think you're right.
It's a last name,
Preston,
or it's a suburb in the northern suburbs of Melbourne.
Maybe it's just a fictional first name.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
So we've just blown the lid on this.
Not
whole
a real
episode.
Name. Why don't it just be like John Giles or like John? Preston.
Ooh, John Giles, I like.
Jonathan Giles, the
football NFL player.
That's why I like the name. I've heard that before.
You know, like Steve Preston. Mm-hmm. You got open book. You can pick any name you want.
I feel like
fucking
having
Preston
that many options, though, you're going to whiff it.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah. You're going to draw too much attention to yourself.
Anyway.
No, sorry that this isn't interesting to you, Scott.
I had never thought about what the head office of a chowder chain would look like. But I think, personally, they nailed, like, nautical corporate chic in, like, the ideal way. Like, a lot of, you know, like, little statues of pelicans looking around and big plants and ocean blue walls.
Do you want to... Is it, like, if you're eating chowder, do you want to be reminded of the ocean or...?
I think so. It's all on.
Do you need to double down?
What is chowder?
It's like a creamy seafood soup.
Just mixed seafood.
Yeah, like mussels and clams and maybe some fish.
Or do they strain the seafood out of it?
Bits. It's got bits.
Yeah. It's got bits. Okay.
It's my nightmare in terms of cuisine, chowder.
You're off it?
Yeah. I could not imagine eating anything worse.
It's got to be creamy.
Yeah.
My wife, Grace... My wife.
What do you say? Sounded like you were going there anyway.
You can't resist. You just really you.
And Borat is making a return. Did he ever leave?
He's back. Who knows? You've had the corner of being able to say my wife.
You're in
not
on
anymore.
It.
Now
you're
on
in
there.
She's a seafood fiend. And
really?
Yeah. That's so she's like 99% vegan, but she'll
half pelican.
She'll dabble in some seafood. I mean, it's only natural.
Don't you get the pelican when you're half pelican.
One time when we were in Hobart, we'd had a nice...
Hobart's a real chowder town.
Oh, yeah.
Big seafood town.
Big chowder heads there.
Yeah.
We'd had a nice Vietnamese early dinner. It was about 6 p.m. Had some pho. We went back to the accommodation. It got to about 9 p.m. This is a Sunday night.
Yeah.
And then Grace was like...
Prime chowder night.
I got to get some chowder. 9 p.m. on a Sunday? All right. So we were like... Google and restaurants.
When the craving hits, you know.
What's open? We
9 p.m.
Booked in at this place down in Salamanca, rocked up. I was like, I think I'm done. Like, I'll have a beer, but otherwise I'm just sitting there watching Grace eat a chowder at 9 p.m., 9:30 on a Sunday night.
Did she enjoy it?
She loved it. Mm. She went wild for it. It was actually like if I was giving testimony on that night, it's like that episode of The Simpsons where Homer didn't have all he could eat. I was like, and what did you do when you couldn't find a seafood restaurant? We went fishing. That's what it felt like.
Did you go fishing?
Oh, yeah.
How was the beer?
She hadn't had enough.
What'd you get? In my mind, you got like a stein, like a really massive beer.
No, I had a Moo Brew dark ale.
Oh, yeah. Moo Brew is good.
It's good.
We went, Jared, Jess and I went to Hobart once for Dark Mofos, and I drank my weight in Moo Brew beers.
In Chowder?
Oh, yeah. Chowder and Moo Brew. That's probably what I for you.
But all of this to say is Chowder's a big deal. People get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had it.
So no, the Chowder either. King.
We're getting off topic here.
The Chowder King, they sell like canned chowder.
I thought it was a fast food restaurant.
I thought it was like a restaurant chain.
Yeah.
What's that? And he's... More money to be made, I think.
Long John Silver's or something.
Yeah, like Red Lobster.
Because how much are you selling a can of chowder for? There's not much.
$3.
I can't, like...
Four packs.
Probably on that. $15. If, like, fresh chowder is my nightmare, canned chowder is...
Yeah.
Is haunting my
nightmare. The nightmare in the nightmare.
Yeah, exactly.
The one where you wake up and
you... Yeah, get it.
It's my hell.
It exists.
Now, the canned, made me think of beers. So now I think, Morgan, you need to make a chowder.
Chowder can?
Yeah, chowder. Yeah,
that's really what we should get into.
Cloudy
I'll
chowder.
I'll speak to the boss. Like, hey, we need to dump all this beer. This is the real money's in chowder.
But don't even tell him. Just start chucking like clams and squid into the tank.
I honestly think if I did that, my boss would like just, he'd have a heart attack. Like, he'd probably die of grief on the spot.
Bunch of clams in there?
It's just like, hey, what's going on? I filled the vats with chowder.
I feel like that's when Augustus Gloop falls into the chocolate lake.
Holy
in,
hell.
In Willy Wonka.
Don't even.
It's got to be clean.
My chocolate.
My chocolate. Exactly.
Ugh. You know what? I think it's Willy Wonka when he accidentally knocks him in. I think it's a pretty defensible position.
He's in the right.
There drinking chocolate. I'm like, mate, you're in the chocolate factory. Wait 5 minutes. He'll get you some hot chocolate.
But he kind of implies when they arrive that, you know, it's all fair game and just have at it. Because all other kids are like fucking eating leaves and shit.
Yeah.
You know? Well, no, but that's what it's all for. Yeah. It's a grey area.
So and there's a boat going around on it. Like, is that boat running clean?
I'm sorry.
There's got to be some motor oil in there.
You empathise with
you think it's
child
defensible?
Killers?
Child killers. Yeah, it's pretty. There's a lot of grey areas in Willy Wonka.
At the very least, it's
it's pretty black and white.
Mild form of entrapment.
He kills a bunch of kids. He has some Candyland.
Whoa. We don't actually see any of them die, so you can't prove it in a court of law.
turned into a blueberry. What's the charge? Yeah. Fructicide.
I guess it's like
well, not dead. I mean, he says he can deflate them. Blueberry.
True. Mutilation.
Yeah. Juice, I believe, is the term.
Juice.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
I mean, at the very least, he's traumatized these children for the rest of their lives.
Mm. You're harvesting the juices of children. I don't think that's looked upon favorably in the eyes of the law.
She's a bad egg, goes into the furnace.
There's no precedent, I don't think.
Kills the dad in that scenario as well.
So if you were the Chowder King,
yeah, okay.
Would you name your... Is the restaurant called... No, it wouldn't be called Chowder King. What's it called? Like,
I think maybe it was called Chowder
I thought
King.
It was called Captain Chowder, but that's just me.
Captain. Maybe Captain the Chowder. Restaurant's called yeah. Captain Chowder, but is it a I'm bit Captain on the nose Chowder. To call your boat Chowder King?
No, I don't think so.
He's the Chowder King.
Captain Caleb.
I want to touch on something that happened right at the end once Jessica has solved the murder. Mm-hmm. And so her and Preston were hitting it off. They were really smitten. A new romance was blossoming, but kind of the murder put the kibosh on that.
Mm. That's a shame.
And when she's saying after Preston's been carted off, Jessica says,
"Oh, Grady, if only I hadn't been such a terrible busybody. If only I could have just let it be."
So she's kind of lamenting the fact that her new potential lover has been taken away for murder. She's regretting that she solved it. Like she's regretting the romance that could have been. But not the fact that the man she was falling for was a murderer and some like multiple people have died.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, she's sort of two people that
got her eye on something else.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I could have had a new life, but
who cares about instead I meddled. Died, you know? One was a private detective that we were introduced to for like 30 seconds and then he got his face blown off by a
shotgun.
The other guy was a real piece of shit.
So you're putting the worth of these people on the exposure they've had to us, the audience. They have no life within the world of the show.
Well, I can only assume. Otherwise, they would have shown us more of the life.
You would hate Law and Order. Starts with the murder. Who is this person?
Why do I care? I've never seen. All they are is a dead body to me.
What's my motive?
Why did this person kill this dead body?
I mean,
it's not even a crime.
What do you want me to say? These people mean nothing to me. Angela, I want nothing but her happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think this is a very complicated, emotionally complicated scenario for her. She's like pretty much like, you know, flirting with this. Although, I didn't really see the flirting very much. It wasn't very obvious.
But I think this is maybe her first romance since she became a witness.
Yeah, yeah.
It was tasteful flirting.
Well, a little bit.
They're playing to their audience, which is more of an older audience.
I thought that was a really excellent moment at the end. Well, maybe it wasn't excellent, but it was a very surprising moment at the end of this where, you know, Preston's confessed, he's explained his elaborate backstory.
I financially destroyed my 3x partners from a safe distance.
It's just him and Angela, and they're in front of the pool where he killed the detective, and he's sort of like menacingly coming up behind her and like holds onto her. And is like, I can't remember exactly what he says. I'll put a clip in.
Another time, a different place, we might have had something.
Then he's like, I guess we better go to the police station. And like, you're 100% certain that she's just going to push her in the pool. Yeah.
And,
like,
is that, and also for the, like,
it's kind of nice.
The 5 minutes while he's confessing, he's standing next to a gun cabinet.
It's all very intentional.
Yeah.
The tension is really rising. Yeah. I thought that was very
clever. It seems like no one is ever keen to take a shot at her. She's just too sweet and innocent.
No, people love it.
That's it. Kind of what you flagged early, Jez, about the killers explaining their backstory, which happens in the last episode as well.
Yeah.
I feel like the show is too nice to have, like, genuinely menacing villains. It always, they need to make the killers somewhat sympathetic.
You got me.
This is one thing that I think is going to happen throughout the show. I think she's going to come across some people who are, like, actually irredeemable and get into some really sticky situations.
Well, I would wonder
there's 250 episodes. You can't have 250 nice murderers.
Well, like, she does almost get jumped in a back alley in New York.
Yeah, that was one of the assaults she wrote.
One of the guys who jumps her is Andy Garcia. One of his first roles.
Andy Garcia, really?
Yeah.
You got to stop saying these, Aaron.
You're ruining all the reboots.
Sorry, what was that, Morgan?
Andy Garcia is one of the street toughs that jumps
in. Is he really?
Yeah.
That's so bizarre.
One of his first roles.
I did not recognize.
And then she gets saved by another
An avid fan.
She becomes a sensation overnight with her book.
Honestly, like, this is... I think this is the thing that I like the most about this show. Is that one? She's got so many irons in the fire at any given moment, just with random people. Like, she's got this whole, like, side story sort of thing about, like, because it's an ongoing joke in this episode that she keeps going to get on the train and then somebody runs up and they're like, oh no, you got to come back.
Wait! Oh, thank God I caught you.
Yeah, what's the matter?
Oh, the police, they've been trying to find you all morning. They won't say, but I think they need your help.
She's got this backstory with the conductor and, the cab driver. Everyone, she's kind of, you know, got this, like, nice little rapport going on with. I actually really like that as an alternative to this kind of, like, you know, hard-ass detective, you know, doing stuff by force. She's actually just genuinely really nice, treats everybody with respect. And it comes back round, you know, really, really works for it. Helps her solve the murder.
That's her move. That's her, angle.
But does she, honestly, though? Does she? Because she offers to tip the conductor and he says no. And then straight away she's like, all right, just puts the money away.
Well, yeah.
Be persistent.
That's what I think. It comes back around in her just like
empty gestures,
mildly grifting people. Because she gets in the cab and makes him drive, like, across the city to the docks.
Okay, then, I'll tell you what. I'll wait for you here, and I'll drive you back to city off the meter.
Oh, Bernie, I couldn't ask you to do that.
Well, what are you going to do, take a subway? Forget about it, Mrs. Fletcher. You go do what you got to do, and I'll be here reading the paper, all right?
And he's like, oh, I don't have any money, and then...
I'm sure I have more cash.
And he's like, I know, I can manipulate this guy.
And he's like...
I know he's got dodgy feet. I've got an ointment concoction.
Yeah, but then he offers to give her a trip back as well.
Yeah.
Free charge.
She's free grifting charge. These guys.
She really is. She's literally selling him snake oil, Scott.
It's not so... I'm just saying, it's very admirable. You don't see it very often, and I love it.
When she takes tries to help the woman with the stain on her dress.
And
an old Fletcher recipe, egg, milk.
That's going to do way more death.
She's just baking a cake.
She's going to bake her dress into a cake.
What was even on the dress?
Yeah, she just spilled, like, gin and tonic or something, like... There's no visible stain.
No Fletcher recipe. There is. Yeah, it's literally like
after the party as well. What do you like? Go upstairs and
I want to point out quickly that character Ashley Vickers. I don't know why, but I followed that actress on IMDb. She appears in 5 different episodes of that show.
Oh, okay.
Seasons 1, 2, 4, 7, 8. All different characters.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that recycled through there because there was a lot of, especially in the finale, which we'll get to. There's a lot of actors in there that I know I've seen in Stargate and Star Trek. And, across the board.
We'll get to that.
Oh yeah.
There's only a finite amount of television actors, you know.
This is true. You got to keep cycling back through them.
Are we ready to get to it?
I think I'm
shuffling on.
I think I'm ready to move on. You guys ready to move on?
Let's do it.
All right, let's jump into the finale.
Jessica pops into a San Francisco radio station to visit friend and exclusively classical disc jockey Howard Deems, who is at a loss about a young duo, T.T. Baines and Russ Connell, coming in to remarket the station to a younger audience by playing something called rock music.
The face, and it pains me to say, the voice of the future.
Apparently, their Drive Time Super Show is one where they play the latest rock track and T.T. Baines and Howard trade insults.
Howard Deems. Howard, what'd you think of that last piece of music? Great, right?
Yes, Mr. Baines, it was great if your definition of greatness includes the banal, the numbingly repetitive, the unintelligible. What you just played is non-music, anti-music. It postpones music. No, it displaces music.
Classic stuff. But it's revealed that the station manager was only convinced to make the change to a new audience after the pair's good friend, Lauren, started a romantic relationship with him, a caper the trio have pulled off in other cities. But Russ isn't too happy about this when Lauren falls in love with the manager and threatens to expose her.
There's only going to be one villain in this piece. It's not going to be me. So just get ready to kiss him off like you did all the others.
And all of a sudden, Ross Connell turns up dead in a hotel room, and classical music-loving Howard is the main suspect. But as it turns out, it was Russ's good friend T.T. Baines that brutally murdered him with a fire poker, all to set Lauren free to continue her relationship. And it's not all bad. Howard Deems has finally come round to this rock music the kids seem to be jiving to.
You know, it's funny, but some of the stuff that T.T. forced me to listen to is actually kind of good.
Howard, am I hearing what I think I'm hearing?
Yes, Jessica, you are. And if you ever tell anyone, I will never speak to you again.
So, T.T. Baines, the young upstart, you know, youth-oriented...
radio presenter.
Disc jockey.
Rocking a Reno Rain-style duster and
kills
a big V-neck.
His manager and long-term friend because...
Because their childhood friend wanted to... Because they were grifting around different community radio stations that were
Let's get into this plot.
What are they grifting, though? They're just
that's
like,
the point.
They're just like pumping the numbers up by having him do a show. There's no grift.
A successful show.
This is the thing. So the whole movie is...
Why did he kill him?
This is the whole movie. So the girl, Lauren, that's... She goes to these radio stations, cozies up with the older owners.
As all radio stations have a lonely rich
older male man.
Manager.
She then convinces them to hire Russ and T.T. Baines to come in. But the radio station's in decline and these guys have a proven track record of improving radio
turn
stations.
It around.
Exactly. So she convinces them to hire them to come and turn the station around because these guys are professionals and do that. And that's kind of the move. But like,
what a hustle.
But it's not really a hustle.
Doing your job.
It really is.
It's 50% grift.
Yeah. But then but that's why they shoehorn.
What's the grift?
Well, they shoehorn
There's
in.
There's no losers here.
Exactly.
What's the grift?
Why does the girl need to kind of make the cozy up to the owner?
Yeah.
Because these guys, they saved 2 radio stations, Chicago and St. Louis. So them coming to San Fran to save this one makes total sense.
They're
bringing in rock and roll.
They shouldn't need to grift anymore.
No.
They've got a track record.
There's no grift. There's that moment in the episode where it's like you've discovered the murderer's done this before in other cities. They've got a track record. Mm-hmm. But their track record is just good business.
Exactly. Yeah. Improving these radio stations. It makes no sense.
They set the whole episode up as the tension between the old disc jockey who's friends with Jess, Jessica
Howard
Fletcher.
Howard Deems.
Loves pumping his classical. Also, this was a really funny thing that I noticed, is the first show where it's T.T. Baines and Howard Deems, and they wrap up and they take the headphones off, and T.T. Baines is like, all right, I guess... Good night, Howard. I'll see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
It's yes.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
How are they on for? Like 15-hour shifts?
6 a.m. to midnight?
So they change up. They get rid of Howard's classical music show and jam him together with this kid playing rock music.
Yeah.
And then, so they'll play some rock music and then just argue about how classical music is better or not. Is that just their whole show?
That's what
is that just like 3 hours
I
of
loved,
that?
I love
15 hours of that every day.
They did the first version of this show and they're all sort of like looking through that glass window from the studio bit and they're like, all right, and we'll see you tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. And they're all like applauding fucking like... They've just like won like the top award at Cannes or something. It's like, this show is so shit.
Also, you haven't like sampled what the listener base thinks.
No
of this.
Feedback.
It's just a bunch of executive yes men saying that we just did the best show ever.
It's like the movie, the scene from like a music biopic where the band just records their number one hit. We've made it now.
Shit.
We're going all the way to the top.
I was right, Mrs. Fletcher. Whether he likes it or not, your friend Howard has found himself a new career.
But why did he kill him?
You got to let this go.
But it's what the show's about.
I know it's the murder, Jez, but it's almost like this episode could just be She Wrote.
Yeah. You know? There's nothing to it. Like, the motive is wafer thin.
This episode to me was like they...
There's a bit of...
This episode was like Frasier, except they took out the jokes, replaced it with a bit of murder, and made it twice as long.
And it was not funny at all. To me, it was like it was just that the whole idea of like it's like oh we'll get these two it's playing to that older audience like oh these two young guys trying to shake things up and then they realize oh no. They're kind of doing the right thing by the radio station. It's in decline by trying to change the demographics and open it up to a bigger market.
But T.T. Baines, he was high off his, like, the smell of his own farts. I don't know why he would put that, you know, his meteoric rise in jeopardy by getting involved in some, you know...
In some murder.
Dirty work. But like, he's absolutely loving himself and the people seem to love him as well.
Yeah, he's living life.
Often referring to himself in the third person.
Like,
what has he said? There's one thing... He's talking to, is it Lauren? And he's like, what was my high school quote? It's like, T.T. Baines going to live forever.
Yeah,
T.T.
Baines
going to live forever. She's like, I just want to make sure you're right. He's like, what was my high school quote?
T.T. Baines going to live forever.
What do I always say? Who am I?
You know what it said in the high school yearbook, right? T.T. Baines will
live forever.
That's right.
It's fucking T.T. Baines going to live forever.
He's had a catchphrase since high school.
Why would he kill someone?
But they were really, they must have been kind of just about out of ideas.
Also,
but the one idea they had was successful, like we said.
Like, well, I know, it doesn't really, like, why kill these guys? Like, and ultimately, their grift was, like, trying to get an extra couple of $1,000 a week out of the radio station. So, I just don't, like, what's the point of risking it for that?
Early in the episode when Russ is constantly like, I don't know, this is a different town to Chicago. People aren't really going to take to us. They're not going to try and kill you because you're putting rock music on the radio in San Francisco.
They'll just listen to a different radio station.
They assume that when... they get shot at in the car at the start. It's because they're shaking things up too much in the radio industry.
Those radical like classical music heads.
It's midnight. Exactly. It's like, he's playing Eddie Vedder. He's playing Pearl Jam on the radio in San Francisco and people are shooting at them.
Yeah. It's the Pacific Northwest.
Conservative. Look, like within 20 minutes of this show opening, we've identified two sharpshooters in this radio session.
What's going on? An ex-Marine who's a salesman and then, the rifle club.
I reckon the rifle club, that was kind of in the first episode with the skeet shooting at the manor.
Yeah.
I feel like that was any old man who's a suspect, he's part of a rifle
club.
This
rifle
is America, you know? I want to get past the motive because I feel like that is just a pit that we're just going to fall into and be unable to get out of.
What's this show about?
All right. I'm going to go to another aspect of the murder, which is the murder weapon or like the mode. Stabbing somebody with a fire poker, if you've like never murdered somebody before, this sounds like I've got experience, but I don't, is a very brutal way to kill somebody.
Also, I don't think like, it would kill him. He just kind of got him
one.
It was a pretty shallow stab.
Yeah. Like, he's got to get the heart, right?
He's done in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's a quick death.
And he's like... And fire pokers, they're not that sharp. They're
no, you've
blunt.
Really got it. So let's game this
demonstrate
out.
Demonstrate on me, Scott.
All right,
please.
So I'm T.T. Baines.
Wait,
right?
Do you have your fire poker? Or?
I got my fire poker, yeah. We'll do it for real once.
Yeah. You have a fireplace in the studio apartment?
That's true. So I stab you, right? You're Russ.
Yeah.
I got to get through the ribs into the heart.
Yep.
It's like, that's a lot of force.
Yeah, but it's... Yeah. T.T. Bain.
T.T. Bain's got a lot of...
He's immortal.
Pushes, pushes through.
He's immortal.
That'd be, I'm just saying, that'd be really traumatic.
It'd
like,
be rough.
Like in a country where, you know, guns are just everywhere.
But he's immortal.
Probably pretty easy to kill someone with a gun.
He's like Thanos. He's immortal.
Thanos immortal. I guess he's going to live forever. That's what they were, Thanos had in his high school.
Is that what the first T stands for?
Yeah.
T.T. Bain's.
Thanos Theodore Bain's.
Thanos Theodore Bain's. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I would have gone for the wallop over the head if it was me.
That's my move.
Like, just, or like, try and like, he was like, he wouldn't listen to me. He wouldn't see reason.
I wouldn't want
beat him up a little bit.
I wouldn't want any blood, you know? I wouldn't want any, like,
yeah,
viscera on my, person. I'd like to keep it clean. Like a,
like a gun.
Especially when you got that sweet.
Well, not even a gun. I think...
a gun and a pillow.
I'd probably poison someone.
That's your move?
First murder, I'd...
Fact's hard to get poison though. It's a murder weapon, poison stuff to come across.
And I can't just like shave the coating off a whole bunch of almonds and give it to someone.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't that work?
What TV show did you get that from?
I don't know.
Arsenic in there or something?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, if you eat like 300 bananas, it can get toxic.
You slip 300 bananas into somebody's drink?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether you
just like the little vial spiking their drink, but Jez is just peeling bananas, just jamming them in there.
Before you try,
he's pre-peeled them, put them in a vat,
and then just
condense an essence of 300 bananas.
It's like when Homer
into one little drop.
Homer gets the 15 pounds of spaghetti into one bite-sized
bar. Yeah,
Just before you try and murder someone, I think you need to do a little more research on this. So I'm just
if I can get 300 bananas into one little drop, and then just. You know,
it's like antimatter or something.
Into someone's drink. And then they'll be like, this beer tastes very heavily of banana. And then die straight away.
Very heavily of 300 bananas.
Well, you probably potassium
poisoning.
Some sort of like German wheat, some one of those like banana style English beers. Or, and then you wouldn't even know. And then bang, dead.
I reckon you could find a way to poison someone, you know?
Yeah.
You put your mind to it.
Yeah.
Like rat poison. That's probably... That's tried and true. People use the rat poison.
Yeah, they do that in prison. Or like sort of poison them slowly over time.
Yeah.
So grind glass into their food.
Oh, is that what people do?
In prison.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's what they do in...
How long does it take?
Is that in Oz?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Couple times.
How long does the poisoning take?
A couple weeks, I think.
That's all right. That's pretty good return.
But it's not like... It's like their stomach just starts bleeding.
Yeah.
No, like, I don't know why.
Because you're eating
glass. I guess I'll keep eating this prison food that's served by my enemy.
Do they do the prison napalm in Oz?
Prison napalm?
Where it's like you put honey in hot water.
Boiling water and then lots of sugar. I don't think they do. They did it in that Sean Bean show.
They did the Sean Bean's change. Mr. In Between.
They do a Mr. In Between.
Oh. Yeah. Watching those two things within a week of each other really made me freak out about going to prison.
Yeah, there was something
just
else.
Just get napalmed first day.
There's something else that I saw.
Just Grace boils the kettle. Well.
Where's the honey?
I got to get her first.
Yeah, that's it.
Got to make a stand.
That's a lesson. That's what married life's like.
Oh, yeah.
If you need to
hide first,
you just got to poison her chowder.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Get some broken glass in her chowder.
You could fit a lot of shit into chowder.
Oh, yeah. It's chunks of shit. It doesn't know what's in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's some big milky fishy mess.
One thing we didn't see in this show, so both these episodes... Both these episodes were, one was set in New York, I think the first one, or like mostly New York State, and this one was in San Fran. But this show is primarily set in Cabot Cove, which we touched on briefly being the chowder capital of the US. Mm-hmm. Now, this show in Cabot Cove, most of the murder mysteries happen in Cabot Cove. Now, fans of the show had a thing called Cabot Cove Syndrome, much the same as Midsummer Murder Syndrome, which we've gone through, these murder capitals. Now, Cabot Cove has a population of 3,560 residents. Now, I don't know whether these stats are 100% correct, but now I'll give you something here. So, per 100,000 people, how many do you think were killed?
Per 100,000?
Yeah, per 100,000. How many murders? Now, just to give you some context, let's go for a sleepy little town. Let's just say a sleepy town, nice little quiet place. Let's say Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah.
39.7 murders per 100,000.
39.
Yeah, just a gentle thing.
That's a lot of murders.
Oh, well, okay. Well, let's look at somewhere else.
I reckon Cabot Cove's like 10,000 per 100,000.
Okay. It's going to be through the fucking
roof. I reckon it's about 1,000 per 100,000.
Okay. Well, let's I'll keep them sort of rolling. So let's say nice little sleepy hollow, quiet little place. Cape Town, South Africa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's just a gentle 62.3.
Nice safe corner 62? Of the globe.
Yeah. 62, yeah. 62,
wow, okay.
Is that the highest? That must be up there.
Well, I mean...
Are we going to go south of the border now?
No, we're going to keep just jumping up a little. Let's just go for another nice little hamlet, nice little grove.
South of the South African border? So nice little ocean?
Let's say Natal, Brazil.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Somewhere safe where you can sort of settle down with just 102.6 murders per
B&B in a little favela down there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or maybe go Caracas, Venezuela. 111.
111.
Ooh, we're getting up there.
Or Los Cabos in Mexico. 111.3.
Ooh. That's that 0.3 really puts you over the edge.
Cabot Cove comes in at a gentle 149 per 100,000.
Oh.
Los Cabos is the highest at 111, but the fictional town of, well, the non-fictional town of this.
Blown out of the water.
149.
Why didn't they make it a fictional town? Because do you really want that reputation as a sleepy little town
well,
in Maine?
Still,
the murder town.
It still has that reputation in the show, but people just keep dying in elaborate ways, much the same as Midsummer, where people get poisoned by mushrooms, people get shot by, you know, die from exploding shotguns.
I would really like to see a cross analysis with all of Stephen King's work, because I think like 90% of his books are set in Maine as well.
Interesting.
He's a big Maine guy. Yeah. So
loves the Midwest. I like small towns.
Maine's like northeast.
Are these people from Maine? Is that why they do it?
I don't know.
These writers?
Couple King and Fletcher. There's a lot of murders going on.
A lot of solved murders, though.
Yeah, yeah. Like, good hit rate.
Very good. Like, almost 100%, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so we've got the numbers correct, 60 people are murdered in the episodes. She travels around a bit because she's a writer, but, there's 60 episodes set in Cabot Cove. Oh, I assume 60 episodes, but there's 60 murders in Cabot Cove.
And this is the big fan theory, right? That she's involved in the murders.
Well, she has to be
at the top.
Like,
can't be a coincidence.
If they're all happening like around the States, and I'm sure there's probably a couple international episodes, I could probably buy that, you know, she's consulting, but the fact that there's 60 in her hometown of 3,560 people, and 60 of those people are murdered over the course of 12 years.
See, maybe she's just like,
horrific.
Maybe she's just so prolific that it's like murderers are coming to the town just to be like, you can't get me.
See if I can get away with it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, they're inviting it. So she's like the LeBron of tech detectives. That's the second time I've
absolutely
compared her to
LeBron. Is the LeBron of detectives.
Well, there's a lot of similarities.
You're right.
If you give me the king, best not miss.
What's like the triple double of solving murders?
I don't
really understand basketball. So you gotta
solve the murder. That's one.
Solve the murder.
You have to put the detective out of the job.
Yeah, and you gotta also commit the murder.
Oh, you reckon? I think maybe fall in love with the murderer.
Humiliate the detective. Solve the murder, fall in love with them. Boom. Yep. Triple double. There you go.
She's putting up those numbers every night. Oh, night in, night out.
She's a machine. She's like if...
She did it on her debut.
Exactly.
I mean, if you look at her efficiency rating, it's through the roof. Her plus minus is insane.
Mm-hmm. Per 36 solving of murders.
Oh, those numbers.
Outrageous.
But yeah, that's it's quite the murder rate out in Cabot Cove. But she... I mean, in some ways, she's doing her job by solving all the murders, but... Imagine how many are getting through the guard, getting past the keeper. Although she's a LeBron of murder mysteries, so she's probably not catching all of them.
Per 36 would probably be close to one, right? Because how long is an episode? Like 44?
44. So and one this, one, and...
But she might solve a couple in some episodes.
Yeah.
About one. She also might solve none. Mm-hmm. And then also you've got the movie-length pilot.
Yeah.
She only gets one in that. So that's like...
Well, there's two...
Two murders.
There's two murders.
Both.
True.
Do you count the murders solved? Like, because if you could say like...
It's murders solved.
Yeah.
It's not just 6 minutes.
Okay. And that's not so... But like... So maybe... So the solving of the murders and working out... Comparing that stat, the catching of the murderer compared to the murder... Like the solving of each... Does each individual murder count as a stat?
Yeah.
And then there's another stat.
Every dead
another,
body.
Another stat. So dead body...
That she traces back to someone... That's a stat.
So her corpse per 36 would be pretty solid too.
Mm.
That's probably a little bit higher. But that all wraps into the plus minus.
Murders solved. Every single person that died is a murder.
You reckon?
True. Yeah.
So if one person kills six people, that's not just one murder because
that's six murders.
Yeah, it's a quirk of their sort of legal system. The way they count deaths is just it's automatically a murder.
Mm.
Yeah. A murder.
Uh huh. Uh-huh.
There's no natural causes.
Yeah. Murder. So in this scenario, maybe I think because they did say that Magnum PI
murdered by cancer.
Magnum PI and this are like. In the same universe, there's crossover episodes with Magnum and this. So, would you say that Selleck would be her Scottie Pippen?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yep.
Now we're really
cool. Number two.
They banged?
Ooh. Well, did Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan bang? I have no idea. Is that what you're trying to say?
Chemistry?
They might have.
They had great chemistry.
Oh, but fucking Selleck and Lansbury.
Selleck and Lansbury.
There's,
man, what a team.
There's 100% some fan fiction on that.
I don't know. Selleck might be put off fan by fiction the fact that she she's taller than him.
I don't know. Maybe Selleck's only... Well, Selleck's only man's tall. Oh, yeah. Well, she's 6'7".
What, Selleck's like a measly 6'3 or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's towering over him.
Yeah. Do you think... This did sort of sting to me in like a lot of the opening credits is just like Angela running errands in the credits. Do you think that maybe retroactively, because you said that you enjoy, I remember that I agreed with you.
Montage.
Well, I agree. Well, about when we talked, when we did the episode about Magnum PI, you said, I remember you saying that I could just watch Tom Selleck running errands.
Yeah.
And I agree because he was delightful to watch. Do you think that maybe they took a little bit of retroactively that formula? They like, yeah, you know what? Tom Selleck's really watchable. Mm. Let's get this character and Angela Lansbury just running errands in the credits.
Mm. She's watchable.
That gets the juices going for people.
Yeah.
Seems like their workout routine also is pretty similar.
Pretty similar, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He runs on the beach. She runs through the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But it's probably why Selleck had the better legs, though. Just because he's running on the beach. Yeah, so Sam's going to really build up the muscle there. Mm.
That's why
she's
they team
on
up.
Uneven ground, though. So she's really light on her feet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Agile.
True.
Can't touch her.
Mm. All right. Should we move ahead and reboot this?
Why not?
I've just got a real short, sharp one. Not super creative. I just from that first episode when she's hanging out with her buddies, like at their solving mysteries, I would like to see this show... If they were to sort of, because they've talked about actually rebooting it and doing versions of it again. Lansbury's expressed interest about coming back and reprising the role.
Of course she has.
But now she's a little bit older.
She'll be passing the torch to someone.
Don't think. Well, I think she's got some miles left in those legs. Don't worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordan style comeback. Come back. She'll play for the Wizards. But this time around, she's a bit older. She needs a bit more help. So I'm suggesting some sort of like hybrid version of the Golden Girls. So she has like a team of mystery girls and they go solve mysteries together. She's got a group of four now.
Kind of like the start of the first episode.
Yeah.
She's got two mates with her. She's got a crew.
Mm-hmm. She's got a little crew there and then she solves mysteries with her crew. So four little old ladies are solving mysteries.
She's not little.
Yeah. Murder They Wrote. Or Murder by Committee. I don't know yet.
I think it's Murder They Wrote.
Murder They Wrote. Yeah, it's the Murder They Wrote, which is
Murder They Wrote is very cool.
Yeah, Lansbury back and then look, I'm happy to sort of, maybe we can, we'll get the, I don't know, it doesn't matter who the others can be. Anyone, we can get any actors, and we'll just age them up, Scorsese style.
Oh yeah,
just to get them to the same level.
Mm-hmm.
Reverse Scorsese.
Reverse Scorsese.
The technology that only Jez possesses.
Jez and Marty. So, Murder They Wrote.
I like it.
I have a similar thing. I've actually got a couple. Because the name of this show is just so versatile. And to be honest with you, I was really gearing up to get some sort of Angela Lansbury Hannibal Lecter crossover in Murder She Ate.
Delish.
Yes.
But that isn't what I've gone with in the end. So instead, I'm going to reboot this show as Murder She Read. And I want it to be like some sort of anthology where it's kind of like a bit of like you got A episodes and you got B episodes. The A episodes are from Angela Lansbury's perspective where she's trying to solve this murder. And then the B episodes are going to be from the murderer's perspective. And essentially, because Jessica Fletcher is so prolific with her writing, people are reading her books and they're, you know, obviously they're murderers.
Mm.
They're going to try and recreate murders that she's got to solve. So they're going to like change some things in there.
Ah.
And there's going to be a different villain every episode. And they're all going to be different older matriarchs. Because I think that's like the one that's like the thing about this show. So you're gonna naturally would be Betty White would be your first episode, so you get the murderer in season one, episode one. Maybe you leave the first episode on like a cliffhanger and then solve it, like switch the perspective, go to the murderer in episode two and then wrap it up, so every episode's like a bit of a pair.
That's fine.
And you just roll through all different like older matriarchs, like just I'm just naming deceased Jessica Walters could, she'd be able to do it really well.
Judy Dench.
This would have been a great idea like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, or even like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all just inspired by her prolific writing. So that's
What she read. What did she read?
I was in the same boat with just fiddling around with that, with the name. There's so many options.
Oh, it's great.
So many.
But I feel like we need to modernize it. So my go-to was Murder, She TikToked.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's just Angela coming in on the TikTok.
Yeah.
Reeling in the kids.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a little homage to the final episode as well. You got to get with the times.
Exactly.
You got to get with the times.
Broaden those horizons.
Yeah, yeah. It's the market. The key demographic is those 12 to 18-year-olds.
I like where your head's at.
Are they like...
You're a business
Is she solving public murders on TikTok? Like, current murders are being like, well, I think if you'd actually seen... I'm trying to think of a recent one that's I can mention that's not too topical.
Ugh. A murder?
There are none. We don't need to do that. But if she was like, I think if you saw in the interview tape that he was wearing a different tie.
Yeah.
It's obviously it was his brother or, you know, whatever.
Just like, yeah, TikTok, like atting the police commissioner who's doing the press conferences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stitching them. Interesting.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing. She knows the format and she just steals out her clues in little 10-second bite-size increments.
Mm. I like it.
Reels in the kids.
For
they're,
the
not swiping, they're not no. swiping away.
No way. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the attention span to watch 47 minutes of Jessica Fletcher. 47 seconds.
This is a grim vision of what jury duty is going to be like in 30 years when... Like, people aren't going to be able to sit through weeks-long trial. Lawyer, like, dealing out all this detailed legal argument. You got to get their attention immediately.
Exactly. Yep. So we're going to TikTok or Instagram our way through courtroom proceedings
now. Yeah,
is that what law school's now? They're starting to open that up, like just TikToking and, like, Instagramming and whatnot?
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to find ways to modernise.
Makes sense.
Yep. Mm. Modernise and monetise.
And monetise and appeal to the younger generation.
Have you been to a trial? I mean,
maybe this is what Viola.
Snooze fest.
Maybe this is what Viola Davis was doing in How to Get Away with Murder, where she was asking for all those ideas.
Oh yeah,
you know, like instead, like I'm going to present the case. You give me
you got 1 minute to present.
You make a TikTok. Yeah. Reply to me.
Grab my attention.
Yeah.
1 minute.
Why am I still listening to you?
She was pretty ahead of the times. Jerome. You got a boot?
I do not.
You do not? That's all right.
I was too transfixed by her workout tapes. Oh, I was going to say...
I mean, that's a reboot right there.
Yeah, like some sort of...
Murder She Ran.
Jessica Walters. Yeah, Murder She Ran.
Jessica Fletcher. No,
Jessica Fletcher, sorry. Just something based around her exercise regime. But, you know, that's more for my like personal consumption.
Murder She Pumped Iron.
Murder She Pumped.
Murder She Pumped.
Murder She Shred.
There would have to be. Do you think there's a Murder She Wrote porn parody out there?
There's a whole suite of different workout styles.
P90X, Lansbury.
All right. Well, then let's jump ahead and let's get into that IMDb list.
All right. This week we got a list, which there's a lot of people on here we've already mentioned. To be honest, it is.
Is that the name of the list?
Yeah, it was made 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, right.
This guy's just been typing it in. People who will probably live to a really high age.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, right.
Famous people who are or seem likely to live around to 100 years.
I don't know if we want to go through this because we might, you know, I don't want to feel responsible if any of them start dropping off.
By the time the episode comes out.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them have already dropped off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know Betty White.
Betty White,
here.
Yeah.
And to be fair, she did live to a really high age.
Yeah, 99.
She did. Accurate.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. She still qualifies.
When did they make this list, though? Like,
I think it was updated 3 years ago. Yeah. 3 months ago, sorry.
So they're already at So she's 99. So they may live to a high... She is at a high age. I think the better list would be picking actors in their 20s.
Well, they've dabbled in that.
Oh, okay.
There are a couple of the kids from The Sopranos are on here.
So wait, just for reference, she's gone some safety options to pin it down.
Yeah,
with,
I mean,
like,
Lansbury's on there, obviously.
Yeah.
White.
Yep.
David Attenborough.
Okay. Yep.
Again, you're already just you.
Clint Eastwood.
No, but there are safeties. They're the safeties of the list.
They're already there.
Yeah, like, exactly. You've already safeties. You got to have safeties. You got to have. It's like the control group.
All right.
So how do you feel about our main man Tom Selleck being on that list?
Yeah, I can see that.
Their comment is, can see him living way beyond 110.
Whoa! I mean, he's pretty fit.
Tall man breakdown. You know,
if he can keep up with Lansbury.
Yeah, true. You know?
Denzel.
Yeah. Picture that. T. Cruz. I think T. Cruz has got to be on there. I mean, he's
B. Willis is on there.
Yeah.
Really?
No, I don't see that.
M. Damon?
Yeah.
Damon. Okay.
I like how we were on the same page about Willis. I'm just thinking, I watched Die Hard over Christmas and that guy's not getting... He's lived
a lot of life.
Yeah, he has.
One of our main boys, Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah, he's already there.
Yeah, he's there. So, he's another safety, but...
I think he's nearly 100.
The whole clan.
You got to give him credit.
Oh.
It's not a safety. It's just... It's like a, it might as well just be a list of old actors people. Who are almost 100.
Well, they have. They're at a high age.
They are, yeah, but it's
a multi-purpose list, Jez.
You don't know. Jez.
They predicted shit.
Jez, this list might have started in 1970, so...
They saw the first diagnosis murder and they're like, this guy. This guy's going all the way.
Yeah.
But they have got Jamie Lynn Sigler, who played one of the kids on The Sopranos, who is currently 41.
That's the one that plays Tony Soprano's daughter, right?
Must be Meadow.
I'm not as across the Sopranos as you. Yeah, it's Meadow.
Okay.
One way or the other.
41 now? She's going to live to a high age, do you reckon?
Huge swing.
I don't know.
What do you reckon
people
that...
with ties to the mob, you know.
Is that... Yeah, because what else are you going on, really? Just, you got a feeling? You're like,
Vibe?
She looks healthy and she lives a safe, quiet life.
I mean, Gandolfini didn't make it too high.
Yeah, but no. He was late 30s in the early episodes of Sopranos. He did not...
He looked every bit of 55.
Yeah. His blood pressure would have been constantly high.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Even if he's acting, he's just constantly, you know.
Eating his body weight in lasagna every night.
Probably wouldn't help.
A lot of red wine.
Do you actually like your blood pressure is lower?
Yeah, well.
I don't have that kind of
range. If you're getting angry in every scene and really fired up, that's going to raise your blood pressure.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Real method.
Yeah, I think so.
Emily Mortimer is on there as well. She's still in her 40s.
Okay, right.
Yeah, okay. But otherwise, it's pretty safe picks. William Shatner, Robert Duvall, James Earl Jones.
Yeah,
these are all old people.
Sydney Poitier, Jez, your boy.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm starting to kind of now swing back to Jez's camp that he's just sort of...
I mean, I think it's like the list is like half these people look like they're going to grow old and half like... Nodding your, tipping your, tipping yeah, your yeah. cap to be like,
you've done well.
Nice yeah. one.
Half is generous.
I'd say he's tried, well, like maybe he's put the other
Daniel
old ones
Craig,
on.
Pierce Brosnan.
Come on.
That, they got yeah, some, now, they got a way to go.
Pierce Brosnan.
He's just about 70, so.
Yeah, and Brosnan was the reason I started buying some Nivea products. Because in my mind, if, hear me out, he advertised them. And if it's good enough for Pierce Brosnan. Gonna be good enough.
He looks pretty good.
$1 million.
Seen some of the scripts that he sort of gravitates towards.
Let's not get into the whole thing of
what he stays young.
Pierce Brosnan doesn't know what's good enough for Pierce Brosnan anymore. So I don't know. I'd be looking elsewhere.
Whatever is good enough for him is something that will pay for the Nivea products.
Well, I can
say he can afford that skincare. No, well, he's made the right choice.
He's still got to buy them, even though he's a spokesperson.
I must admit, I did move on from Nivea once Jared Butler started promoting Dove.
Well, he's not on the list, Morgs.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to live to a really high age.
So now I've got to swing back. I'm not a big Daniel Craig guy. I'm probably going to get back to what Brosnan's doing. Because I still think, have you guys seen Goldeneye recently? I haven't, but I assume it's still pretty good.
Okay. I don't think he ages after the movie's shot, if that's what you're thinking.
I don't he looks as young as the day it was made.
Exactly. In my mind, it's still 97, baby.
95.
95?
Yeah.
But I feel like there was
like a reverse Dorian Gray situation. That's a weird kind of movie where the actors get older, but they, in real life, they stay the same age.
All right, so this is the perfect use of the Scorsese technology where they just keep updating the cut of the movie so the actors age,
they age with
relative
the movie?
To how old the movie is.
Yes. We're going to start reshooting all old Pierce Brosnan films.
Yeah, if you go back and watch E.T., Drew Barrymore is like 55 now.
Who's that for?
Oh, man.
For us.
For the modern audience.
It helps Morgan make his skincare product choices.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's like a Nivea marketing.
Well, I've moved on from Nivea, as I said. Okay, but for a long time, big Nivea guy. I was using Dove for a bit, but big Nivea guy for a while. Now everything's tailor-made by my wife picks out all my stuff.
Mm. That's such a good idea. Like people talk about using like deepfake technology to like maybe a different actor could portray. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, you don't want Denzel in Training Day. You want Angela Lansbury. Mm. We got it for you.
Yeah.
That's not the use. It's aging people up as the movies go.
Yeah.
That's so good.
And before we depart, Morgan, I've got a special little treat for you.
Oh.
A list for your private collection.
Perfect.
For your at-home research.
Excellent.
It is a list of people with widow peaks. Widow's peaks.
Ooh, this is,
I know you love,
this is directly in my cue zone.
Yeah, you keep on top of where people's hairlines are at.
Yeah.
You got 491 people.
That's a lot of at-home research.
Lansbury's on here.
What?
Lansbury's got a widow's peak.
Oh, well, I guess widow's peak can be, yeah.
It's just a pointed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But still, it is something that I'm interested in. I'm a hairline enthusiast.
Who else we got?
Why do you think I'm so obsessed with Cage?
JT? John Travolta?
John Travolta, Widow's Peak.
Yeah. Yep.
No, like,
it's shaved now.
Not now.
No,
it's still the hairline. It doesn't matter how long
depends,
the hair is.
It depends on what...
There's no hairline on that
clean.
Hair.
To be fair, it depends on what hairpiece Travolta's rolling with that week.
That's true.
It's a variety.
Yep. I'll send that to you, Moggs.
Thank you.
To peruse in your
that's
own time.
My personal consumption. All right. So, Murder, She Wrote. You guys going to go back and watch... I should have pointed out there's four TV movies that came after this. Plus, Jez, this is for you.
Yeah.
There was a point-and-click video game.
What's that?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck
with
yes.
a follow-up sequel.
I will personally consume that.
There's, so, one in 09, and they had a follow-up in 2012. Point-and-click video game.
That was well past the era of point-and-click video games.
And Murder, She Wrote.
No, it was not.
Who's doing it? 2012, huh?
The series ended in 96. There was a TV movie in 97. Yep. 98, 01, 90, and 03, I think.
Okay.
I have to go back and double check that. But they ran from 97
rippled
to 03.
Out through the ages.
And then 6 years later, the
point
game.
Click. Yeah. I might. That's probably the one piece of Murder, She Wrote.
You'll go back and dabble in.
Expanded Murder, universe that I might consume.
Hmm.
Murder, She Clicked.
Murder, She Clicked.
Fucking hell. Is now a good time to reveal to you guys that I've been thinking about starting a Twitch channel for us where we just play all of the like video game versions of the shows that we watch.
Yes, please.
Yes. I really want to play the Prison Break game.
Oh, man. Let's do it.
I'd love to play Murder, She Wrote Point and Click.
Let's do it.
2009.
Yeah. There's an audience for that.
Maybe not Twitch. Maybe it's a little video.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's Twitch it.
Let's Twitch it. Done. All right. Let's get that set up.
Could be good. I don't know how many of the shows we've done. Is there a Star Trek Next Generation video game?
There's got to be. 1,000%. And there'd be I'm sure there'd be a Supernatural game out there.
Yeah, there would be.
Magnum PI?
No. Numbers?
Numbers?
Oh, there'd be a numbers
there'd
video
numbers.
Game.
There'd be like,
teach kids math.
There'd be like an educational game.
Mid-2000s were kind of the...
sweet spot for...
Yeah.
Adapting TV. I feel like there was a lost Xbox game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I can't imagine.
Sopranos video game.
There was?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not watching that though.
No, I know. But like, that was around the time. I reckon there would have been a lost one.
There was an Alias video game.
Yeah.
Alias video game for sure.
Because I remember there was a Dark Angel video game that I rented. And it was really, really shit.
There was a Wishbone board game.
Oh, yeah.
We can Twitch that.
Oh, yeah. Any board game we could do too.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be a murder. There's 100% a Murder, She Wrote.
Board game.
Which
like
I imagine
Cluedo.
Would just be just Cluedo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Like just Angela Lansbury themed Cluedo.
Anyway, just put another iron in the fire.
Yeah. Cool.
I see what you did.
I see what you did.
Haven't got enough to do, but
iron through the rib cage.
Yeah. All right. So we're not going to go back and rewatch any Murder, She Wrote, but we will play the point and click game and show it to people on Twitch.
I am going to start using the term people going and competing in the indoor Olympics for sex.
Yeah, that's fun.
Did you hear that one in the first episode?
No.
They were referred to some people going off and was it competing? Competing in the indoor Olympics.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? 2 years ago, she was low gal in the steno pool. Then all of a sudden, she and the captain are practicing indoor Olympics in hotel rooms all over town.
God.
Interesting.
I missed that.
I think that one's just... I'd never heard it before.
No.
I think it's probably just died, but I reckon we should try and bring it
back.
A
lot of Olympic events are held indoors.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
probably
the,
more
the,
than half.
That's maybe the reason why it didn't take off, but...
I've got a little bit of experience in
sex
trying to get things going in terms of like trying to set out, like trying to get rumors or sayings going.
Yes.
I've been down
in
the bedroom too. I'm writing a self-help book. sex tips and getting rumors
helping
started.
Yourself?
I took that as specifically for your own help. Like, I need help. I gotta get this down.
Somebody help me.
That's not where I was going with that joke, but I actually think it was better. The one.
Have you heard about Marilyn Manson?
I am familiar with Marilyn.
Yeah,
it's the most well-documented fact in the world, as you pointed out.
Apparently, he took a couple of his ribs out.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I did know that. Because that's just so well-known, Jez.
Everybody knows
bring
it.
Up. Everyone
did
knows
you start that? Is this in the book? Do
that's
you
not one of mine.
In the book?
No, but that is a case study in the book.
Okay, good.
How to get a rumor going.
Yeah.
And how not to. All right. So, I think maybe just leave things there. As always, jump on the socials. Give us a like. Give us a review. Give us a rating on your preferred.
Stitch us
on TikTok.
You can stitch us on TikTok. If we say something that you don't agree with,
or give us some praise.
Throw us some
come
feedback.
At us.
Yeah. You don't always have to come at us.
Whatever.
Suggestions. We'll do
it. If we did something you enjoyed, you know, give us a little slap on the back.
Yeah, exactly. You Jessica Fletcher
tap
fans
on the
out there,
little,
come talk
little,
to us.
A little bottom pat.
Yeah. Like open palm slap on the ass. Nothing says good work like that.
No.
All right. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Jez.
Thank you.
Thank you, Abe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, everybody.